Almost 1 week ago, the offices of a French satirical newspaper were attacked by three gunmen who slaughtered 12 people. This was the newspaper, by the way, whose cartoonists were known for creating cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. This act of terrorism committed by these people show exactly how much radical Islam has hatred for a free-thinking society, and equally, maybe even more importantly, what that hatred results in, and not just in the Middle East, by the way. Here to discuss this tragedy is National Security and Terrorism Correspondent for PJMedia.com, Patrick Poole. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
And, of course, PJMedia.com is where you can read Patrick's work and the journalism of others in this and other regards. As a layperson, Patrick, sitting on the outside looking in, when I see a sovereign country like France, a lot of people haven't really talked about this, surrender sections of major cities to Sharia law and Islamic courts, eliminating domestic courts and police protection for citizens. Where's the surprise that something like this is eventually going to develop?
Well, certainly in France, they have, and it's been widely reported, there are more than 700 what are called no-go zones spread around France. Particularly in the Banlieues around Paris. And these seem to be breeding grounds, you know, going back to November 2005 with the car-burning intifada, you know, that lasted for several days and was quite the crisis for President Sarkozy at the time. And I would expect that events of this week are going to be put a lot of pressure on President Hollande.
And this isn't just France where this has happened. Great Britain, similar situation. And, well, to a lesser degree in size and significance, but impact certainly a major one. Here in New Jersey, Jersey City was long known as an incubator for radical Islamists.
Well, yeah. Yes, the reports that one of the attackers from the other day had been basically radicalized by someone from Abu Hamza's mosque, the Finsbury Park Mosque in London. You know, there's clearly a lot of interrelation between these extremist hotspots around Europe and, quite frankly, around the United States. And I think the there's news coming out just here within the past half hour. That Al-Shabaab has announced that a kid from Minneapolis conducted a suicide bombing on the Parliament building. And Minneapolis, the Twin Cities area, has been a hot spot coming particularly out of the Abu Bakr al-Siddiqui Mosque up there, which I've reported on a number of times now. So, yeah, I mean, it's a problem in Europe, and it's also a problem here.
When you have what is supposed to be the leader of the free world, Barack Obama, call ISIS the junior varsity team, you have major media softening the stories, eliminating the radical speak and prophesizing of these individuals. How much of that is an empowerment for terrorism?
Well, it's certainly a contributor. And, you know, I think after the events of this week, And France was already on high alert from several terror attacks last month. I think there's going to be a lot of this soul searching on the part of a lot of authorities in Europe. You know, we had this similar situation in Australia about these extremist messages, and you know the fact that these two attackers on the magazine the other day were already known to law enforcement authorities. How is the system breaking down, and what's contributing to it? Now, having said that, I think there's going to be absolutely no discussion here in the United States in our political circles and from the establishment media about this, because as we've seen since the attacks on Tuesday, they're curling up into a ball and trying to hide.
Patrick Poole, who is National Security and Terrorism Correspondent for PJMedia.com. PJMedia.com, I would say, on the web, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. We certainly saw that, Patrick, the initial hesitation by at least the White House press department to call this an act of terrorism. You have a military in the State Department who refuses to use the phrase Islamic terrorism. again, we seem to be enabling the enemy.
Well, yeah, the administration is almost begging for something to happen here. And honestly, a lot of the problems go back to the second half of the Bush administration. But, you know, the purging of counterterrorism, you know, I was very actively involved in the investigation regarding the Fort Hood shooting. I've been consulting with the Army prior to that time. And, you know, in that case, the FBI was aware of Major Nadal Hassan's email communication with Anwar Alaki, who seems to be tied to this event in Paris this week, posthumously. The FBI shut that investigation down. FBI headquarters shut that investigation down. So, you know, I'm just not really hopeful that things are really going to change here in the United States. And even after the Boston bombings, where we had dead Americans, you know, lying on the streets, that there's really going to be any significant revisiting of the administration's policies.
And, of course, the Fort Hood shooting, as we all remember, wasn't an act of radical Islamic terrorism. Of course, was a case of workplace violence.
Well, yeah, and that's what Homeland Security had termed it. I don't know. I don't think that anybody actually believed it, and I think that's part of the problem, is that we see these officials time and again roll up, tell Congress, tell the media, things that, I mean, are laughable. I mean, nobody believes that Fort Hood was workplace violence, you know, anybody with a lick of sense. And, you know, and yet these are official policies. And the people who are going out in front of the media, going to Congress, and making these absolutely ludicrous statements are the ones who are developing and implementing these policies.
I want to wrap up with looking ahead, and this is something that's sort of been on the peripheral, but given location, like they say in real estate, location, 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 King Fahd of Saudi Arabia apparently is in poor health, and if that house and that kingdom were to be disrupted, distracted, or even fall, how much of a breeding ground or how much of a target of invasion is Saudi Arabia for radical Islam right now?
Well, I mean, it's been the font of radical Islam. I mean, virtually everything we're seeing today is directly tied to the Saudi funding of Wahhabis as part of their political pact to maintain power with the Wahhabi Ikhwan. So, and we've seen the globalization of Wahhabi ideology that's driving all this terrorism. But if there is a change of power, you know, from what I understand, the princes are gathering in Saudi Arabia at the moment to, you know, what's presumed to be to pick King Abdullah's successor, and ISIS is certainly making they've done a number of attacks on the border just here within the past several days. So you know, Saudi Arabia, the home of both Mecca and Medina, the two holy places in Islam, it's like the crown jewel. It would be the cherry on top, so to speak, for ISIS or any one of a number of these groups. You know, you have AQAP, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, you know, who would like to make a move too. So I think we're definitely going to see the Saudis pressured continually here in the foreseeable future.
And it turned the world economy because Saudi Arabia, even with the low price of oil, is a major resource for oil as well as control of a lot of the waterways to get foreign oil to locations, not as much to America anymore, but certainly to Europe and other locations. So that's, again, something that is possibly lying out there as still to be. And to follow along as the events rapidly continue to unfold in this tragedy and become better aware of the significance of all of this, PJMedia.com is the place to go. And Patrick Poole is one of the people to read. Check his work out. And the others at PJMedia.com. Patrick, thanks so much for your insight this morning.
Thanks for having me.